as a woman of color, we're often told to be humble, right? We're taught to do and be of service and be humble. But in this instance, it was not about humility. It was about owning my brilliance and speaking that truth.
Hi, everyone. Today's episode, I'm interviewing Rima. She's the visionary and founder of the Hira Collective. This conversation was really interesting. We talk about ancestral roots and how it connects to wellness, how finding your own voice, your own authenticity, and falling deeply in love with yourself is really important in your wellness journey, especially when you feel disconnected and displaced. So let's get started.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From a Full Cup. I am so excited to have with me today Rima. Rima is the visionary and founder of the Hira Collective. Rima, welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you.
So Rima, before we get started, maybe tell us a little bit about what is the Hira Collective?
Yeah, great question. I love talking about this, my little baby right now. So the Hira Collective is an online booking platform, vetted holistic and wellness practitioners. So we've got anything from Reiki practitioners, energetic healing, meditation, money mindset coaches, business coaches. We have over 50 practitioners currently on the platform, and we continue to onboard more practitioners every day. So it's both simultaneously an online booking platform, but it's also a community of practitioners. So on the other end, we also are a very rich community of practitioners who support each other, who help each other. We have co-working sessions and business connections and just to really, really empower and uplift each other as we climb.
I love anything that's about upliftment, but I want to hear the backstory. How did this come to be? How did you get into this line of work?
Yeah. So, you know, I've struggled with all kinds of different things in my life, whether it be like with my mental health, my depression, things around, you know, my health. I had a concussion. I had a major car accident recently. And as a child, I was always very curious about my ancestral lineage and the modalities and the healing modalities and just like how we did things. And so I'd often ask my grandparents about things. And I'm from a population that is displaced. So we no longer have a home or a land to, you know, go back to when, you know, we're sometimes racially told to go back to our country or our land. I don't really have that. But, like, curiosity started very young. But as I like, start to grow older and have like these like depression or anxiety, I was always looking for alternative ways to support myself and find that sense of healing, simultaneously a sense of connection and that connection to my roots. And I came across practitioners who were heartful in how they shared their practices, and whether it be Reiki, or I had an energy healing practitioner I was working with, multiple therapists that I worked with, that came from a very colonized lens. And so along my path, you know, I started to build my community of people that I leaned on that did honor the ancestral lineages of the practices that they share. But it took a while to get there. And what I've noticed was that when I was in those dark, dark spots, I didn't know where to look. Like, where do I look for somebody? And so I really kind of built the Hira Collective for that version of me then that needed it. But they are able to go on the platform. They're able to search by modality, ailment, or symptom, and have the agency and the empowerment to choose a practitioner that best aligned with them. And the fact that all the practitioners are vetted also like give me the comfort that folks who are accessing support from the Hira Collective, they can trust that all the practitioners are aligned with honoring those ancestral lineages, not from a form of colonization or harm, but to support not just our healing, but honoring those lineages of the practices that they're sharing.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And I'm sorry that you kind of, you know, you've had these harmful experiences, because it's really frustrating when you are seeking healing or you're seeking restoration, you're seeking to improve your own well-being. And then the treatment that you encounter or the practitioner who's delivering the treatment delivers it in a harmful way. So you end up worse off for it. And that can obviously prevent a lot of people from moving forward again, right? From wanting to trust that there are, that something is out there that would work for them. So I'm glad that you were able to still honor your intuition and keep searching, and that you were able to find modalities and practitioners that were in alignment for what you needed and that what would give you what you needed to kind of get to the next step. And, you know, you shared a little bit about some of the hardships that you've gone through, but this podcast is all about disruptive wellness. And for me, disruptive wellness at the heart of it is, how do you own your own wellness? What do you want? How do you want to feel? And then how do you express those two things? So when you reflect on your life experiences, what are some of those moments that have really challenged your well-being? And then what was that conversation like internally to say, I don't like this. I know what I want. And it's X, Y, Z. How did you have that conversation with yourself? And like, what's a lesson you've learned along the way?
Yeah. One thing that I just want to share is like a quote that someone said to me the other day that for me embodies all of this. It's, you know, anytime that we have a material breakdown, there's always a spiritual breakthrough. And I think for me, that kind of like what led me to even creating the Hero Collective or pushed me to continue to seek those practitioners to support, because I knew that it couldn't just be the doctor or this like Western form of medicine, right? And so those moments that I've kind of had that internal dialogue, one of them was most recently, in the last year and a half, I was in a really a toxic workplace environment. And my manager treated me like, and would say things like I wasn't a leader, would tell me things that I didn't know what I was doing, would, you know, crush my sense of being and like, you know, treating me very poorly. And what that forced me to do was actually dig my heels and own my brilliance. It actually forced me to actually be like, no, I'm brilliant. As a woman of color, we're often told to be humble, right? With our brilliance, we're taught to do and be of service and be humble. But in this instance, it was not about humility. It was about owning my brilliance and speaking that truth. And I think that for me was a real strong form of wellness and owning my wellness, because it was owning how I deserve to be treated. And then also taking control of like how much I love myself and falling deeply, deeply, deeply in love with the being that I was, because I was forced to combat these comments that were coming at me that I know weren't true and how I was being treated. And so that situation has really unraveled an evolution of my relationship with myself and what I will and will not tolerate. I meditate and I do all these like beautiful things that are so sacred to me and the rituals that I do. But now I do them from a place of not needing to come back to myself, but admitting and owning that I'm already this beautiful human that exists and I won't tolerate or take any comment otherwise. That's not to say that I think I'm perfect. I think we're always in a form of, you know, I adhere to a form of transformation. The Hero Collective, I know I'm bringing it back to this, but the Hero Collective, the logo is actually a butterfly with a diamond. And Natalie, that's actually why it is. The butterfly represents the fact that we're always this iterative form of transformation, but the diamond is that we're already whole and complete. And that a diamond is actually created as a result of pressure and compression. And in spite of that, or because of that, we shine brilliantly and we're invaluable. Unfortunately, however, diamonds are also found in the back of violence and harm and colonization. And so it's also reclaiming that value, reclaiming that worth, and reclaiming that, you know, and owning and that truth and that reconciliation of the harm and violence that exists on the backs of bodies to that take advantage of this value of human beings, right? So I find that as I've evolved, so has this brand or the company, the Hero Collective, and totally completely reflects how I see myself and how I see the human existence both individually and collectively.
I love when there's deeper meaning behind things. And I love that your personal journey, how it's reflected in this business that you're now creating. And I think something you said is so important about knowing the inherent value that you have as a person, right? Not because of your role, not because of your contributions, not because of your title, but because you are a human being on this planet, there is already value and worth within you. But do you identify that for yourself? And if you identify it, how do you allow other people to treat you? How do you allow other people to communicate with you? Is it to uphold that same identity that you have for yourself? Or is it to tear you down, right? Because there's a lot of people who have, maybe they have this version of self-love, but then if you allow people to stomp all over you, to mistreat you, to abuse you, then it means you aren't actually upholding your worth to the same level that you think you are. That's like a really important distinction. And I'm really happy that you explained that. And you talk about ancestral roots. In what ways do you believe that reconnecting with ancestral roots can positively impact our present day experiences and wellness?
I think that we're in an epidemic of loneliness because we've really disconnected, not just from each other, but from the realm of understanding that we're not connected, right? And I think in every culture, religion, you know, ways of being and understanding the world, there's always a sense of connection or community that we've lost, right? And so for me, and this is the quote I use all the time, that really has helped me kind of continue along my journey and knowing that I'm not alone, is Maya Angelou says, I stand as one and I come as 10,000. And for me, that really helped me feel protected. It gives me this sense of like release. It gives me this sense of like, it the magic that I bring to every space, conversation, lesson, whatever it is, it's not just me. It's the thousands of voices and spirits that live in me, with me, and are along with me. And that's where the humility is for me. It's that it's not that I am this like, you know, giver of whatever. It's that I'm as a result of the 10,000 folks behind me, with me, right? The spirits with me. And I think for me, that's why I think the ancestral root is so important, because on one end, it allows us to reconnect to that sense of collectivism, that sense of connection. And on the other end, it's also a form of decolonization. It's a form of reclamation. We repeatedly see in the world practices being used or shared from a place of harm, right? So we're sharing, you know, Reiki, and we're not acknowledging the Japanese roots of where it comes from. And yes, we can also say that we don't really know the roots of anything because there's so much erasure. But what we do know, we should share, right? And as we continue to, you know, peel that onion, we'll learn more. So I think that I believe that as we honor the ancestral roots, we're reconnecting with those ancestral lineages and the spirit and the power that is there, but we're also practicing a form of decolonization by actively reclaiming those practices, bringing honor to those practices and those spaces and places that are or once have been, you know, dismissed for like, oh, like that woo-woo, or like, you know, meditation's weird, or yoga's kind of like a weird thing you do. And you know, as you know, the white man starts to allow these practices into the space, then we start to think that they're valuable. But I want to change that. I want us to honor the roots that what we have, and you know, what we know, the practices that we share, without waiting for permission from the white man to approve it.
Yeah, and there's such power dynamics there. But when we talk about authentic ways of knowing and being, but also that history, and how are we acknowledging the history, and is it carrying forward, or is it being transformed into someone else's history or someone else's new day going forward? But there was a history, but because it was erased, no longer does it exist. So these are all really deep level, high level, critical ways of thinking. And it's important for us to engage in conversations about, you know, different modalities, different practices, and what is the history behind it, and what's the lens from which we're viewing it and interacting with it. And I'm curious to know, maybe from your personal experience, are there any specific practices or rituals from your ancestral heritage that you found particularly transformative or healing or empowering in your own wellness journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to first acknowledge where and who I've learned them from. So my grandparents, my grandma, Bopati Hiranandani, that was her name at birth. Her name then changed after marriage, both her first and last name. Bopati means butterfly, and Hiranandani means diamond. So she is the essence in the logo of the brand. So she's my partner in building the Hira Collective. She passed 9 years ago this August. Her partner passed away very young, and I never met my grandpa, but she was very close to her brother, who can continue to be in relation with her. And in my life as well, every Sunday, him and I would have a Skype date, or and then that evolved to a WhatsApp or a FaceTime call. He lived in another part of the world, and he would do face yoga with me, or he would teach me mudras, and he would do meditation with me. First thought it was just like a cute thing that him and I would do, and it was like kind of fun, and I would learn things. But as I reflect back on that, it was really about teaching me about all these other ways of, you know, finding healing and finding our space and finding ourselves and coming in on ourselves and helping me regulate my nervous system. Because he could obviously identify that I wouldn't do that well in those times. And so, you know, meditation and yoga is very integral to my everyday. Another thing that I do a lot is journaling. But the journaling is not is not what you might think. The journaling is actually, when I was little, I would hear all these stories about my grandfather, my Nana, my maternal grandmother's husband, and I never met him. So as a child, like very, you know, naively, I thought if I wrote to him, I would hear him or I would be able to talk to him. So my journal was never Dear Diary. It was always Dear Nana. And I would talk to him. And so I still do. I still will write to him and have these, like, you know, ethereal conversations with him. And so those three things, I think, keep me really afloat. You know, before we started recording, we talked about going for walks. And I love going for walks. I love grounding. I have a little dog who's really fun to be with. I don't enjoy going out in the winter, but I do love being in nature and just, like, grounding and having that, like, that commune with nature. And those are some rituals that I, you know, practice, and I honor my body and I honor myself in knowing when I need them. I do them with a sense of joy, and I allow myself to bring in those practices as I need them and as I want to engage with them.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of honoring your body, but I also love that you paid homage to where you learned these practices from. Mm-hmm. And I think specifically in a time where, you know, a lot of people have migrated and they're disconnected from either their family, their ancestors, or even the actual physical spaces and places from which their ancestral roots lie. I think being conscious and intentional about how can you revive that for yourself, or how can you maintain those connections, is really important. So I think what a creative way, right, to write these letters to someone that you did not actually get to meet, but you were still able to honor the connection and still allow, in a more evolved sense of the way, a two-way communication. You were open to receive in a different kind of way, right? So it's not so logical and black and white, but I think that's like a really interesting way of, and I think sometimes we just do have to get creative, right?
Yeah.
When we're displaced or when we're disconnected from those we wish we could have been connected to or wish we were still connected to, what are ways that we can still foster some sort of authentic connection that's going to be meaningful for us, fulfilling for us, and still help us in our journey.
Yeah.
And there are deposits all around the place, right? And it's like funny because like one of the most impactful, probably the most impactful trip I've ever gone on was to Egypt. Wow. And even when you go to Egypt, you can, on a spiritual sense, not like a religious sense or anything, but you can just feel the impact of the ancestry, the impact of the lineage, the impact of all the experiences that have happened before. You can just put your hands on a rock and feel it. You can just feel it in the air. So even me just placing myself in that space, in that country, walking the walk, breathing the air, like it was so impactful for me. And that's like even another way that people can find some sort of solitude and connection, even if you don't know what it is you're connecting to. I've actually had that story happen a couple times. The other time it happened, I went to Zambia. That was my first time going to Africa, so to the motherland. And so that's obviously where my ancestral heritage comes from. And it's the moment I stepped out the plane and we stepped directly at the tarmac, I just felt something. I was like, I feel like I'm home, even though I've never been here before. Yeah. And so I think that those things are kind of embedded deep within us. And I can't give the explanation of it's in our DNA or where it is. I don't know all of that. But I think that when you belong, you just know. And when you connect, you just know. But on the other side of it, so yes, we have this really powerful connection to our ancestral roots, but at the same time, sometimes we have a lot of intergenerational trauma. So addressing intergenerational trauma is often a significant aspect of reclaiming wellness and healing. So I'm just curious, have you had to navigate that in your own journey, and or what advice would you give to someone who's in a similar path?
Yeah. Great question. I think there's a lot. I think when we categorize emotions as good or bad, I think that's actually where our first misstep is, right? Every experience, every emotion is bringing us closer to that version of feeling a sense of peace and connection. And life also makes more sense backwards, right? Doesn't make sense when you're in it, like when you're actually in it, right? So when I reflect back, I think there's always been a lot of anger and like feeling of not enoughness because of the color of my skin. You know, I remember scrubbing my skin when I was a kid, wanting to be white. I thought I was dirty. And, you know, when people talk about India or like this like land, I'm like, I think I'm Indian, but I'm not sure. And so I think that there was, you know, as a child, right, like that anger, that confusion turn into anger. And I think I just needed to experience what anger looked like in different spaces. For me, I think, you know, what's happening current day, when we, you know, the current conversations that we have access to, we do have around, you know, the slavery, or, you know, what's happening with the displacement of Palestinians. The reason I get so angry or upset is because I feel connected to that, because I also feel like I experience that. And so I allow myself to acknowledge the feelings come up when we're talking about other, you know, populations that are being displaced or have been displaced, and the impact that it's having on that community, right? As we're dividing families, we're separating families, because that's really how we harm the future generations of any community. And so my advice would be to allow yourself to experience all those emotions, and then take those emotions, work through those, and then transmute that into, now what do I do with that to uplift, right? Because if we can't just stay in anger as well, and there's almost like a hierarchy of emotions. So if I'm working through this one, how do I move up to this emotion? And then we can't go from anger to joy, right? We have to go from anger to then maybe we go to a sense of, you know, disassociation even. And maybe that takes us to, I don't know all the layers, but we have to allow those steps to take place so that we can then come to resolve that and transmute that to something else. And then find your people to do that with, right? Spewing on anger on other people is only making the world a worse place. I don't think that's going to create a more harmonious place. But find the people that you can connect with, where you can have those honest conversations, where you can call each other in and out. You know, Natalie, I feel like you're going to be someone who I'm going to call on and who I'm going to get to have conversations with, to learn with and learn from, right? And I learn with each other, like from each other. So I think it's really important to open yourself up to connection and to help you also find that, but also find spaces where you could find the coach or that healing person. You know, shameless plug, jump on the Hero Collective to find that support for you, right? Because I think that's what helped me the most.
No, I love that. Thank you for sharing. And I think it's so important too, to understand that you have to give yourself grace for where you're at.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And I think, so you mentioned a couple of quotes. So my most favorite quote of all, and I quote on this podcast all the time, is to thine own self be true. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are walking around lying to their own self. They're mm-hmm. living in inauthenticity. Mm-hmm. And I think the most impactful thing we can do is be true to ourselves and then follow the path that we're called to take, even mm-hmm. if we don't know exactly what it is. But it starts with just having that reckoning of what is the situation. Like, even as you said, like, what are the emotions that I'm currently feeling? How do I process this? How do I kind of move to the next level? But just giving yourself grace to recognize this is where I'm at right now, and all the emotions are valid, right? And I think of emotions just simply as information, and then it's up to you to decide what you do with that information. But that's really important. And I like what you mentioned about finding community. And I think that's a really good tip, because I was going to ask, like, how do individuals create that sense of agency and empowerment in their daily wellness practices, despite societal and systemic challenges? So community is one of those for sure, because if you are in spaces where you don't feel safe, or you don't feel acknowledged, or you don't feel seen or valued, but if you can find spaces where you do feel that, then you can feel more empowered to kind of make a difference and to honor your own calling. But are there any other suggestions?
So I wanted to actually go back a little bit what you said about community. And for me, I really lacked that, you know, and I felt very misunderstood. I felt very disconnected. I didn't uphold the ways of code switching, or, you know, my proximity to whiteness, as many others in my family did. And that was hard. It was hard. Because I wasn't Indian enough, I wasn't white enough, I wasn't, you know, and I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I also, you know, I was writing to my grandpa who's dead and I never met, right? So I had all these, like, you know, flipping rocks, right? Like, I was, you know, I was a unique child. And so as I grew up, it was just really hard for me to find my people and find community. And like I said, I felt really misunderstood. So I want to acknowledge all those folks out there who feel like, well, okay, you want me to have community, but like, where am I going to start looking for that community? And I would say, just do what you like doing and just do it. And those people will come to you, whether it's collecting rocks, or, you know, joining a meditation group, or, you know, jumping on the Hero Collective. We have a ton of community events happening. Like, come find your people. But I also want to say that community is a radical act of healing. You know, in an individualistic world, we're taught that go to the doctor, get the medicine. You're responsible for your health. You know, it's because of what you're eating that's causing you not to eat, you know, be well or whatever, you know, your stress. But we're not looking at it from a system issue, right? The stress is caused because we're in a system of colonization and patriarchy. We're in a system of toxic work environment. We're in a system, right? And so, you know, being in community is really a radical act. And so when we move toward feeling in community, having conversations you and I, Natalie, are having, you know, building those connections where it can be so healing, that in itself is healing. And so I really invite that sense of vulnerability when you do find those people that you can feel like you can be vulnerable with, you can hold, you can be that, you know, weird self. I don't like using the word weird, but if that's what, you know, the world has taught you that you are, like the self that you are, that's what I would say, is lean into that and try to move away from this individualistic belief that healing has to happen alone, because it doesn't. It never did. It never has been. We just have adopted this belief because we're in a colonized world.
No, I love that. It actually reminds me of a podcast episode I did last year with Quibila, and we were talking about this idea of community. It's a couple times on the podcast, but community is so powerful and healing in community is so powerful. But the thing that prevents us from it is everybody wants to keep to themselves. They want to keep the hurt, the pain, everything to themselves. And so it prevents community, but then it also prevents healing. And so when we think about our individual well-being, it has to be thought of alongside the collective well-being. And so a lot of times we are thinking, we're just measuring our own well-being. Well, how do we feel? We're not paying attention to how does the collective feel around us and how are these two things moving in synergy and alignment with each other? Or if they're diverging from each other, why is that, right? Because at the end of the day, if you're well, you would think and hope that the people around you are going to be well too, so that everybody can experience the fullness of life, right? That should be our want. Thank you for sharing that. What are some practical tips or techniques that listeners can implement in their daily lives to connect with their ancestral roots in support of their wellness journey?
I think everything starts with a pause. I think, you know, the reason that there's so much anger in the world, there's so much confusion, there's so much division, there's so much cancel culture, is because we're not pausing. So I invite people just to start there, to be honest. And that could look like in the morning when you get up, when you pour a glass of water, you watch each drop enter that glass. You feel each drop come down your throat. It could look like when you're brushing your teeth, you feel the bristles, right? It could look like you pause and look at the different colors on your plate before you eat. And you acknowledge all of the people and that were part of the fact that there's food on your plate. The farmer is the person who then picked fruit, the person who then brought the fruit on the truck, the grocery store clerk, like all those things. And I think when you start to do that, you'll start to invite the sense of curiosity and this sense of connection that even the food on your plate, even the water in your tap is connected to something. And that'll open yourself up to then being like, okay, so what's my connection to Lydia? And the reason I invite it to be that way, and it sounds so superficial, but and like not related, is that I think it can feel really overwhelming, especially when we're coming from a population or folks are coming from a population that are displaced. I think it can bring up a lot of anger of like, you know, I'm never going to learn, or, you know, my ancestry was murdered and killed. And although those feelings and those experiences are very valid, how do we bring grace and compassion to that experience? Things have to be hard, right? We create this belief that healing is hard, and then we come to this light. Why don't we flip that narrative and say, well, can it be easeful? Can my experience of reconnecting to my ancestral roots be easeful? And so I'm suggesting this because I think it's more easeful. And then as we start to build in that curiosity, just start writing, like rewriting, see what comes up. See if there's people in your community that, you know, look like you, are part of the same ancestral lineage as you, that you can connect with, and learning about them. And that might create triggers of like memories or things from your own background start to go to like thrift shops and things like that, where you can start seeing and looking at things. Because it's amazing what the human body actually remembers and what we can actually remember when we look at things too. And I think that it's a journey, not a marathon. It's a marathon, not a sprint, right? It's something that we're like meant to know all at once. We'll continue to unpack and unravel as we continue to evolve. So we can then pass it on to the generations below us and beneath us. As you connect to those ancestral lineages, whether that be through meditation, whether that be through a practice that you're learning from somebody from your own community, or journaling, or just sitting in silence, take note of those things, right? Take note of them and awe, and truly awe them. Allow those tears to come through. Show grace and respect and love for those practices so that you're building that connection and knowing that that connection will continue to spiral upward.
Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. And at first, you know what? I really like how you explained that sometimes you just need to start in a lighter way, because there can be topics that are very burdensome for some, very painful for others, very harmful for others, very scary to even like enter into. And so I appreciate the easeful way of healing. Like that's something I'm going to take away and think more about that, because I think, you know, when we talk about therapy, we always talk about doing this hard work, and some of it is hard, I'm not going to lie. But how reimaginative to consider what would it look like to have easeful healing instead. Like that's something I have to go away and ponder. So I appreciate this conversation and just making me think about something different from a way I've never necessarily thought of before. So that's exciting to me. Rima, this has been such a good conversation. I really appreciate you coming on the show and just sharing all your wealth of knowledge with us. Before we wrap up, we're going to transition to rapid fire. Are you ready?
Yes, love it.
Okay. So first question, it's nice and easy. What is your go-to karaoke song?
No, No, No by Destiny's Child.
What's a really good book that you would recommend everyone should read?
The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. It's my favorite. It's poetry. It's the best. Gorgeous. Also, Bell Hooks, because we're talking about reimagining. Bell Hooks, all about love, all things Bell Hooks. Is, you know, if we're talking reimagining, lean into that. Let's see how you can reimagine how we lead and see life, right?
Funny enough, I was going to mention Bell Hooks when we were talking about this idea of community and self-love. And I'm going to link that podcast that I had with Quibula in this show notes.
Love it.
What is your favorite way to fill your cup?
Cuddling with my dog, Nico. And a good cup of Indian chai, because it makes me feel so connect to, you know, just the art of making tea. That's like what my parents did it. My grandparents did it. My great-great-grandparents did it. You know, whether they're in Pakistan or India or Canada, we made tea. So I love that.
I love that. And this is our final question. In three words, what's your version of wealthy life? And for me, wealthy is spelled W-E-L-L-T-H-Y.
Wealthy is freedom in service and always being connected in community.
So freedom, service, community.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Again, Rima, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'd love for you to tell the listeners how can they learn more about you and your work and stay connected to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is www.thehiracollective, Hira spelled H-I-R-A, collective.com. You can also find us on Instagram. It's the same handle, The Hira Collective. And we'd love to have you join our community.
Awesome. All of Rima's information will be in the show notes. And to the listeners, continue to serve yourself, your loved ones, and your communities from a full cup.